Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number Smart Beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number Smart Beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com. What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Hi, friends, and welcome to the Papaya Podcast. I'm your hostess, trying her mostest, Sarah Nicole, and each week I'm going to be dishing out some sweetness mixed in with some seeds of wisdom or something like that. So get ready to get inspired, get candid, get real, because we are all in this digital space together.
All right, everyone, welcome back to the show. Today we are going to do a topic that is something that makes me cringe from the inside out and makes me want to throw up a little bit, because we're talking about money and money literacy. And I know that if you're like me, that might make you deeply uncomfortable, which is why we have a very good guest on today, Nicole Lapin, who is the host of Money Rehab and somebody who knows the life of living paycheck to paycheck and now teaches, lives, breathes, giving that financial literacy to somebody, to other people, especially women, which I think is really cool. So thank you so much for being here, Nicole.
Thank you so much for having me.
So how did, like, tell me your story. How did you get into being into money? Because that sounds like the worst. If I'm honest, I don't even like to think about, if I get an invoice in the mail, I break out into sweats. Like, I don't like the subject. I know it's important. I know it's like both the giver of my stress and the thing I avoid the most. So I want to know, how did you face something that is oftentimes so stressful head on into the point that you now talk about this all the time?
Well, we have to reframe that into being the source of power, because that's what it really is. Money is amazing. And I didn't always think that way. I grew up in an immigrant family, a super broken home, like just used cash, never talked about money, didn't have the Wall Street Journal on the kitchen counter. My boyfriend in college said he wanted to be a hedge fund manager. I thought he wanted to be in gardening. So when I tell you, like, I know these feelings. I was that girl. I didn't open my credit reports. I didn't open my taxes. Like, I was completely clueless. That boyfriend, that hedge fund wannabe guy, dumped me because I couldn't hang out with his Wall Street friends because he said I wasn't smart enough. So, like, ultimately this was an Elwood situation, but it wasn't about a guy. It was about getting a job. And so when I was 18, I wanted a job in broadcast news, and I interviewed at a station, and they asked me if I knew anything about business. And when I tell you, like, my armpits are sweating even thinking about this moment, I said, yes, absolutely. I love business, totally. And I was like, you know what? I figured out harder things in life. I can figure this out too. And I did. When I tell you, I was terrified and I lied to just get a job. I was completely clueless and realized ultimately, once I just jumped into the deep end on the floor of the Chicago Merc, which I thought was a mall, but it's the stock exchange in Chicago, I realize that money is a language, just like anything else. We just don't have a Rosetta Stone for that language growing up. And so once I spoke the language, I was like, oh, duh, this is not that hard. I just needed to learn the actual language. There's so much jargon. There's so much of the lingo is meant to keep people scared and anxious and out of these conversations. And so once I conquered that, then I spoke it to the world. And then fast forward 2 decades later, I'm the least likely person to be teaching anybody else about it. I started as a poetry major, Sarah. So like, if I could do this, I promise anyone can do it.
I love this because I'm somebody who I know I don't ever remember. I remember my parents talking about money. I remember conversations about it. I remember them teaching us about, you know, debit cards. I then got married at a young age and my ex-husband really understood the finance world. So I let him take all of those reins. So I went from my parents sort of being those understanding voices to my ex-husband being that understanding voice. And then I was 30 and divorced and never had, like, didn't have an account in my name and had no idea how to manage money. I was living paycheck to paycheck, but not in the worst way. I figured out, like, that's just what that season of life was. I very much was there. And then the moment I started to, you know, make more money, I was working multiple jobs. I was getting more coming in, a little bit more comfortable, less fearful. I had this same scarcity mindset and that idea of, I don't want to gamble at all. I don't want to put this anywhere. Investing sounds scary. Everything sounds scary. Taxes sound scary. Everything sounded terrifying. And it really has been, I've allowed so many other people to sort of help me in terms of investing. But I found that so many women, and I've had this conversation with a few of my friends who are CEOs of companies and have gotten into investment work. One of my friends is actually in, it's like Shark Tank, but in Canada, it's Dragon's Den. So she's one of the dragons. And I'm like, I just wish more women had conversations around things like this, or at least understanding money and understanding investing, so that, you know, it, when you do come, when you do are leaving sort of that scarcity mindset, potentially, that you don't have this fear around it. You don't have this, like, money gives you so much anxiety around things. Talk to me about how you got over the hurdle of sort of that fake it till you make it to, like, understanding that financial literacy, because it does feel a little bit like if you didn't understand it in high school, it's too late for you. You're not going to get it now. I'm still somebody who doesn't fully get it and heavily rely on other people to help me get it. Where's the line of, like, what we need to know and what, how we gain financial literacy without sort of going over our heads with it?
Let's change that today. I mean,
okay,
you are just as smart as anyone figuring out these finances for you. And no one is going to care about your money as much as you do, period, the end.
Yes.
And so for me, I think that once I realized this amazing power, no, it's never too late. The force of compound interest was used against me in the financial system. I got into a boatload of credit card debt. I got myself out of it the hard way. Like, I lived paycheck to paycheck. I ate brown rice and beans because it felt fancier than ramen. And I figured this out at the School of Hard Knocks. And by the way, I went to a really fancy school, never learned this stuff. Like, you, it sounds like you talked about this in your home more than I did. But you look, that's no excuse. And so for me, the way I approach finances is a combination of tough love and forgiveness. So forgiving your former self for what she didn't know, it's okay. She did the best she could. She was 30. She was divorced. You know, you did the things that you needed to do at the time. But right now that you have the resources, I'm here, you have the opportunity to say that's not how it's going to be moving forward.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's where the sweet spot that change and magic can really happen. And the top three things people say as an excuse for not getting their financial lives together, and really the biggest enemy is between our ears. It's the mean girl inside our heads that we need to tell to take several seats. Is first, what you said is that it's too late. I'm too old. And second, that I'm not good at math. And third, that I don't have enough money to start. So let's pick those apart. First, you're never as young as you are today.
Yeah, true.
And as far as I'm concerned, today is as good a day as any, right? No one has ever in the history of the world said, I'm so glad I didn't invest earlier, right?
True.
Can you imagine if you put just a little bit of money away in your 20s, what that could have done? I mean, I kick myself all the time, but then I realize, like, today is as good a day as any. Number two, the math.
you know, a fifth grader can do the math that's required to get your basic financial life together. It's the humanities part. It's the interpersonal relationships part that is the thing that really trips us up. So talking to our significant other about money, talking about prenups, getting our friends to pay us back, all of this financial trauma. Like, I had tons of financial trauma. I saw my house foreclosed on when I was little. I went through the housing crisis. I bailed my mother out of jail using cash under the sink behind the maxi pads that, like, I'll never forget. You know, I had serious financial trauma, but we all do. Like, we grew up through the dot-com bubble. We grew up through the pandemic. We saw our friend group spend a lot of money or hide money or these sort of habits. And so we all have sort of financial trauma. So drama is not a competition. If it's sucky for you, it's sucky. And it's something that you should take a look at, because that's probably standing in your way more than any math probably could. And the third is that you need a lot of money. You don't need a lot of money to start. You need the most time possible. The way investing works is that the power of compound interest really gets interesting over time. And so it's not actually the amount of money that you start with. It's the earlier that you start.
That makes me happy right off the bat, because I remember being the person that, like, genuinely didn't have much money at all and was living paycheck to paycheck, that it almost felt like a slap in the face when your friends had, like, money to put away. It was just like, what money? What are you talking about? How do we have anything to put away? And then, you know, you have kids, and my kids are teenagers now, and I know they're going to get into this time of, like, getting credit cards, and I know how persuasive that can seem and so easy it can seem, and I want to help them, you know, get away from debt and potentially, like, putting themselves into situations that might be harder to get out of. And I want them to think about money as, you know, a resource and an opportunity, and not like a matter of personal worth, but more of, you know, what you can, like you said, like, the more time you have on your side and everything, and it can just feel all so intimidating. So I love that that sort of breaks it down to a place of, like, it doesn't have to be so inaccessible. You don't have to have XYZ in order to start and at least begin to understand some of these things. Now, let's talk about credit cards, because I think that that's the one that a lot of people really fall into. Now, I love a credit card. I'm a big points girl. I love my points. I like collecting points. So I almost always use my credit card for everything. I thankfully was so terrified of debt and didn't have to, like, in the seasons that I was paycheck to paycheck, I weirdly had enough points that in the times that I was really close was able to bridge that gap with some of the points that I'd collected. But talk to me a little bit about that credit card debt, like, some of those, maybe even, like, talking to our kids about how to avoid that, or when you're in it, how to sort of start getting out of it in a way that doesn't bring shame to the situation. Because I think so many people have gone through credit card debt, and it can be very, very hard to get out of and very hard to talk about in the first place.
Well, the first thing I would say to any parent who wants to have a financially literate kid, and I think all parents do, is that the number one way to do that, and people will ask for hacks or, like, games or whatever to play. And there's a lot of things that you can implement with kids, teaching them about how interest works, you know, having them negotiate for their allowance, teaching them how to negotiate, like, all sorts of little things. And we can go into that if you want. But the biggest thing by far is that the kids are watching you. If you are not financially literate, if you are not financially confident, they're watching everything you do. And so this is a situation where you could go through all of these exercises from here to eternity, but they're watching if you are scared of your bills, if you, you know, stress out about money, if you, you know, hoard, whatever it is, like, they're watching every step you're making when it comes to money or anything else. And money ultimately is just a tool. So you talk about, you know, this idea that you want your teenagers to not think that it's the end all be all, but use it as a tool like anything else. It's like a hammer. You can use it to build a house or tear it down. So money without meaning is just paper. It's the why and what meaning you assign to it that makes it valuable or invaluable to you. So I think that coming to it from that place, I think, helps a lot of parents realize that, yeah, I would do anything for my kids, like, and I should do this. And so when you're addressing credit card debt, and I went through credit card debt. I came up with a system for myself, prioritize to pulverize. I love alliteration. And so I broke down my credit card debt by what it costs per day. And so I tackled it per day. I think it was like $11 or something per day. And I said, okay, well, I can handle that, but I couldn't handle the thousands of dollars that I had accumulated. And so I think anything hard broken down into steps is easier. So like little steps and then little baby steps and then even smaller steps. The first time I sat down to do my taxes, I was like, okay, I'm going to block off all of Sunday and just sit here and do my taxes until they're over. And I ended up like drinking, eating ice cream, not doing my taxes because that's so unrealistic. I set myself up to fail. I created an impossible task for myself. What I should have done and what I ultimately did was say, okay, one day, all I'm going to do is literally uncrinkle my receipts. That's it. And then I felt like, okay, I accomplished this. The next day, I'm going to put those receipts into little piles. That's it. And so once you approach these seemingly insurmountable tasks into baby steps, they feel much easier to tackle and accomplish.
I think that's just good life advice. I actually had a podcast once with somebody who coaches people through divorce, like when they're going through divorce, and she's like, we need to reframe it as a project. And when you take it down into digestible daily things that you need, steps you need to take versus, oh my gosh, my entire life has to have this massive shift, it can really break it down to, this is what I need to do today. And that can be a little bit more approachable, a little bit more understanding. And maybe, I think for a lot of people, less anxiety inducing. Because I know, and my team knows this very well, that the second like I even have to pull receipts, I'm sweating. And I don't know why. It's like this. Oh, do you know when you're going, this is how I feel. Do you know when you're going through the airport and you're going through security and you have to put everything in? I always feel like I've accidentally done something illegal, that I've accidentally carried something over the border that I wasn't supposed to do.
That's real.
That's how I feel with taxes. I'm like, what mistake? What if I've made a mistake somewhere in here? I've missed a receipt. I've missed a thing. I haven't accounted for something. And it makes me so anxious that I just immediately brush off the project to somebody. I'll default to somebody else. So year after year after year, I've never really understood my own financial taxes because, and I think that this is fair. There's a lot of services that exist out there that do a really good job at this. And it's not to discredit that at all. I love those people. They keep me alive. But it makes me a little sad that I never figured it out. That like school never taught us properly how to do taxes, but we somehow know how to, if Susie gets on a bus at point A, she can get to point C by, 3 days time. You know, I wish there was more education around that. And I agree with you that I think that our kids will very much mirror and receive the narrations of what they have at home. So I do think that there is like a hurdle to have there in terms of making a little bit more approachable for us and getting it down into bite-sized things. Like you said, the sorting of the receipts, that feels approachable. That feels like a project that somebody can take on. But I want to talk to you a bit about one thing that you mentioned, which is some of the money anxiety comes from discomfort. And, there's this old saying that I love. I don't know who said it, but it's, you'll never agree with how people choose to spend their time or their money. And I think in our world, sometimes our spending can reflect the spending of other people, what we see other people doing, what we see other people acquiring, how we see other people investing their money. And then we have the people that we're in relationship with, and that way that we spend our time and our money suddenly comes to the forefront as well. And we hear this a lot where, financial stress can be a leading cause in relationship breakdown. And I think a lot of it comes down to nobody wants to have that conversation. We maybe spend money in different ways, or our lives got, we fought so hard for us both to have really good careers that now it's costing us so much to balance our life out in a way because we can't both be home to cook dinner every night. We also need childcare. We also now need multiple vehicles. Somebody's also going to have to pay for a cleaning service that comes in. It just suddenly, as life goes on, financial decisions become faster, swifter. They kind of go on top of each other. And those conversations in a relationship around money Like my husband has to be like, okay, we're going to have a little money chat. We're going to put it here. It's nothing to stress about. Everything is fine. Like he literally has to coax me into having it because he knows the second the word money is said, I will panic. Like I will be like, nope, something's happened. Something's wrong. And everything is everything. And I think a lot of it comes from that scarcity mindset or like that feeling of that maybe that fear that carried over from a season where I was very afraid of what would happen if I didn't have money. And so talk to me about like, how can we approach even relationships and conversations around money in a way that builds our confidence and builds better relationships with other people so that we don't have like catastrophe or anxiety around having a very honest, open communication around our finances, our spending, all of that. That's a loaded ass question. I'm so sorry.
No, please don't apologize. This is all really good stuff. And I want to tackle all of it. I mean, first of all, the idea that we didn't learn this stuff in school is completely, utterly bananas that we know the Pythagorean theorem, but don't know how to do our taxes or a business plan or how to do a budget even. I even talked to business schools where they would have me come and do basic personal finance training or give my money school because I was so tired of saying this for years and years that this wasn't taught in school that I created like a course, the money school. And I was like, you guys are spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on your brain. Like, why am I here? I didn't go to business school. I just learned this shit in the school of hard knocks. And so, you know, somebody said to me, like, I have money, I have checks. And I was like, oh my God, this is crazy. Like the stuff that stands in our way of getting our financial life together is figure outable if you can address where it stems from. So that's what I was going to ask you. Like, where does this fear stem from? And you kind of talked your way through it a little bit. You said it came from this time in your life where there was scarcity and it sounds like it trickled over. Your husband knows that. He doesn't fully maybe know like the why. Maybe you don't even know the why, but he kind of like deals with it with kid gloves with you when you guys are having financial conversations.
Oh, yeah.
So can we double click on that? Like,
yeah,
where? So tell me about that scarcity time.
So I went from, like I said, I went from being in my parents' home to being married and everything was like in joint accounts. So I had no managing over any of it. So at 30, going through divorce, I walked into a bank and burst into tears. And thankfully, this woman had also gone through divorce and she was like, I remember this feeling. Like, I know how hard this is to come in here and not know anything that you're about to do. So let's like walk you through it. And she set me up with a bank account. And I couldn't get my own mortgage. I had to have, my grandfather was a co-signer. I couldn't get my first car. I had to have everyone. I felt like a five-year-old that was 30 with three children because I had no financial score or credit score that I felt very behind from everybody else. And it made me feel very small, if I'm honest. Like it made me feel small, made me feel stupid, made me feel like I had to ask everybody for help just to even, I'm like, I have the money to pay for this car, but I can't even get the loan for it. Even though I know I can pay the bills, I can't even get the loan for it. So it just made me feel very small. And then I went into sort of getting on my own two feet, had my place to live, had the kids, had my car. I'm working multiple jobs. I'm feeling very, very confident in all of this stuff. And then our dog, everyone who listens to the pod knows this story, but like our dog ate a pack of gum that was sweetened with xylitol and caused a very expensive vet bill. And it was right before Christmas. And the only way that it was like a decision around saving the dog and in my head, I was like, I'm not going to be able to pay the bills. Like, I don't know what to do here. And so we saved the dog and I lived on grocery points that I had accumulated for years. And so I was using those grocery points to sort of pay for everything, gifts, everything. But that moment of that, oh my gosh, I was so close to the line of potentially not being able to pay my mortgage and not being able to pay my car payment and feeling like I failed my children, feeling like I failed everybody who I had entrusted because of this. And also just like that massive, where's the right call here? I do believe everything obviously worked out. The dog lived. Everything is fine. She's healthy now. No regrets there. We got through that season, but getting through the season didn't change the feeling that started it, which was something happened and I wasn't prepared for it. And so I definitely feel sometimes I get caught up in the traps of watching other people, feeling like they're a little bit more ahead of me when it comes to understanding how to plan for the future. I have a job, I mean, in social media, which means it's not guaranteed. It's very volatile. I'm not on like a sliding scale salary that'll grow over the years. I have no idea what's happening. So I still kind of have this, I got to hold on to my points in case something happens. And that has caused me a lot of, I don't know, it's like never really gone away. It's been about 8 years, I guess. And I'm financially in a better place, but I'm terrified of, I don't like spending money. I get really weird about investing even because I'm afraid of what happens if I put it somewhere and then I need it. And just a lot of, I mean, tax season still stresses me out. I got audited a couple times, which made me feel like I did something wrong, even though it came back all fine. So a lot of it just comes from like this one, I think, lack of financial literacy, that feeling of feeling very small and having other people help me along the way to the point that it just made me feel like I didn't know what I was doing. And then when something did happen, made me feel almost like foolish, like I didn't plan enough and I wasn't smart enough to get through that season, that it freaked me right out. Obviously it stuck with me because it was this weird feeling of like, you can never actually make it on your own because you can't get yourself together. You always need somebody else. Like I feel like if it weren't for my husband, I would be so terrified of like where I would be financially because I just am overly trusting of other people and overly, I don't know. I wish I cared about money in the way of like being passionate about investing, being passionate about like utilizing it in different ways, but I feel very far detached from it and very fearful of it.
Well, thank you for sharing all of that. You are definitely not alone. And I would be lying to you if I said that all of that stuff goes away. It doesn't. I still feel scared, and I've gone through a lot of formal trainings, informal trainings. I talk about this literally every day. And so I don't think you ever get to the other side of it. It's a constant journey. But I think a big step, and the reason that all of my books are 12-step plans, is the only problem you can't fix is the one you don't admit you have. And so the first step to any recovery is admitting you have a problem and be really specific about what that is. And so when you say like other people might have it more together than I do they? Or like, does it look like that on social media? Right? And I promise you from talking to enough people, they don't. We all have problems and struggles. And I think that confronting those head on is the only way to get past it, obviously, when it comes to money, to break it down into those baby steps, to address them, because those problems will change as life happens. You know, once you learn the language of money, then there's crypto and NFTs and like it still changes. And then, you know, your money problems could become, do I have a will with my husband? Do I have an advance directive? Do I have an estate plan? Like if you just continue to have more problems, like the only constant is change. The only certainty is uncertainty. And there's a lot of emotion around this. So like, forgive your former self. I would be lying if I said that there is a magic way to make all of this anxiety go away. But there are some things that you can do to take the wheel and to take control and to also, you know, use a lot of the philosophies and the wellness techniques in other areas in finances. You talked about, you know, this idea that breaking down into baby steps was talked about in your divorce episode. It's the same thing. Like a lot of the stuff that I take from psychology or philosophy, you know, applies to finances because it's just an extension of all of our other issues, right? So stoicism is really helpful for me when it comes to money, which is, you know, the idea that we suffer more in imagination than in reality. And I think that you do that like I do and like so many of us do, you know, because what's the reality? And how does it look in the worst case scenario? Sometimes I address the worst case scenario because there's a lot of talk about like positive thinking and like the positive outcomes, but like what's the worst possible outcome? Okay, so let's say the podcast, God forbid, ended. Let's say all podcasts ended. Like Apple decided to be like, nope, no more podcasts. Spotify is like, nope, we're done. Social media, Instagram just like bankrupt. I don't know, whatever. So like, would you be okay? Like, what is the biggest fear? And in that scenario, like, would you be okay? Because my big fears are living in the gutter, broke, alone, homeless. Like, I still have so much of that fear. And so I think of it like I see those fears coming and I'm like, oh, what's up? Like, nice to see you. Fears. And so acknowledging them is a way to take away some of their power. But like, I think, okay, well, what if all of this stuff goes away? Will I be broke, alone, and homeless in the gutter? Or would I go live with my, you know, best friend, Tracy? I will be fine. And so I sort of like play forward what that looks like. Okay, so let's say podcasting goes away. Instagram like gets, you know, eliminated from the app store. Then what happens? Yeah. Are you going to be okay?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, I think if I'm honest, with the time that I was making it work before, I was not doing any of this. And I think a lot of us get stuck in where we are now and creating scenarios based on the fear of where we are right now, forgetting that there are several different paths to take and several different ways. And this is what I mean about like the comparison mindset, because it can be really easy to look at other people in the way that they're, like I said, spending their money and spending their time and being like, oh, I mean, it must be nice that you're going on vacation. I have to pay this bill. It must be nice, like, or I wish I could upgrade my vehicle to that. And just like sometimes our financial decisions can sort of come out of, I mean, this is at least my reflection, is sometimes my financial decisions have come from feeling like I needed something that maybe I didn't, or feeling like I saw somebody else do something that I felt was important and maybe it wasn't. I think sometimes I have maybe put myself in scenarios where I have overspent to sort of fit what I think I'm supposed to be in and not necessarily what the right thing to do. I mean, we've gone and looked at houses that would have made us money poor and then came back from that. And we're like, I think we're really happy where we are. Instead, let's take out a small loan and renovate the house as opposed to taking out a very big loan and moving, right? So that's like one of the things that we've done and talked about. And I think that it's just, it can be so hard because we really don't know other people's financial snapshots. We just sort of witness a lot of it more now. The grass always is greener. There is the keeping up with the Joneses, but it can be really hard to not let that impact your financial decisions. But nobody is talking, like my girlfriends don't sit around and talk with each other about how they're investing their money or how they're saving their money or how they're, I straight up asked one of my friends how she's getting first class flights. I'm like, I need you to tell me exactly how you are managing getting on planes with first class tickets. And then she was like, oh, I have this credit card and it builds me up these points. And I never pay for first class, actually. It's just an upgrade I get with this card. And I was like, huh, signed up for that credit card. Haven't done my first class yet, but I'm on my way. And so I just feel like there is this big lack. There's a lot of comparison, especially among women. A lot of jealousy, a lot of comparison, but then we don't have conversations about money because it feels, I don't know, like I find that my husband has conversations with his peers about how they're investing and how they're saving and, you know, the financial world. And somehow I don't notice that among women very much. What is like your thoughts on that and sort of like building women around having conversations about money and building each other up with having that financial literacy as well?
I love it. The same thing had happened in my group of friends. You know, we all talk about everything at dinner before we talk about money, sexy time, bikini waxes, bowel movements, like all the things. I think money is our last taboo. You know, sex is not taboo. Politics is not taboo. Maybe like mental health, maybe fertility. But money is by far the biggest taboo we still have. And so the way to confront that is to go first. Like any hard conversation, you go first. And so you want to talk about it. You brought that up with your friend about the flight. And you know what would have been helpful if she was a little weird about it? You could be like, hey, you know, here's what I do with my grocery points or you know, whatever.
Oh, I'll tell everybody.
And so any hard conversation, like, you know, talking about addiction, talking about whatever, somebody then feels licensed to open up about their own situation. They're like, oh yeah, me too. Somebody in my family had alcoholism or, you know, whatever. And so money is the same thing. Like, you want to talk to your significant other about money, you go first, you bring it up. You put your oxygen mask on first, right? Like, you feel comfortable with that conversation. In all of my books, I write how much I made for my books at all my jobs, like at the networks that I was on, because I felt like if I'm going to have other people talk about money, like, I'll go first. Somebody has, like, I'll show you mine if you show me yours, or don't even show me yours, as long as you show yourself yours. Because once you do that, then you can open up that dialogue. Everybody's scared about doing it. This is the same conversation that I have with people about their friend groups and what they talk about and what they don't talk about. Like, you're not alone. But the only way to change that is to do it yourself, honestly. And so the comparison component of it is also really common. Like, we constantly change our goals mid-game. Like, once we have one goal, when you said to me, oh yeah, but I made it through when there was no social media, no podcasting, like, I figured it out, right? And so wouldn't that, Sarah, like, be so stoked about who you are today and what you have right now? Like, wouldn't she be so proud of you? And so what ends up happening is you get through that time and then you're like, cool, cool. So now I want this. And then you get that. And then you're like, but like, I'll really be happy when I get this. And then we constantly, like, we just set ourselves up to fail because we compare ourselves to other people when we don't know what their goals are. Like, I don't know if somebody has a yacht and you're like, oh my God, I'm not doing anything with my life. It's like, hold on. Did you even write your goals down and your timeline down? Like, was a yacht even on your list? Like, why are you upset about it? And so we just changed the definition, like, constantly. And so if we stick to what that definition is, I truly believe that we can have it all, mm-hmm. but only if we define what it all means and stop changing the definition on ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, like, that's what I was sort of touching on at the beginning, is like money not being tied to our worth, because much like many walks of life and different goals you might have, it can be very easy to believe that once you get to a certain point that you would just, I feel like the person 8 years ago, if she saw a snapshot of where I am now, she'd be proud, but she'd also probably be a little pissed off at me because I still feel like I'm not doing enough. It still feels like it's not quite there. And I haven't, I mean, and not even in a way that I'm like, need more, but just the fact that, like, money doesn't necessarily equate happiness, the same way that, like, your pant size isn't going to necessarily equate happiness. Being married doesn't necessarily equate a happy marriage. Like, there is so many things in these goalposts in life that can be really confusing, because in media, it's shown as something that gives you all of this emotional joy, but really they're just individual tools and choices and things that can make different parts of your life more. I would say money has afforded me a little bit, like, more comforts. It's afforded me more opportunities, like traveling with my family, which is something that we couldn't do when they were younger. And now I'm very grateful that about once a year we get to go on a trip. I will never forget that. I also feel like there has to be, when we're talking about money, there also has to be a gratitude mindset about it, and not in a way that you're like groveling at it, but in the sense of, I remember my first home and I always said, I just can't wait for a house with a driveway. I just can't wait to have a driveway where the kids can play in a driveway. And then I got the house with a driveway. And then I was like, I just can't wait for a house with, you know, that is not attached to anything else. It, like, stands on its own. It's like on its own with its own driveway and a garage. And then you get there and it's like, if you don't sit and soak it up and recognize that, like, the decisions and things that have gotten you to certain places and really enjoy it, then I think that more monster is always going to exist inside of you. And I think that's what my husband and I sort of went through when we looked at this, like, bigger house. And I sort of had this moment of, like, you know, watching these, like, big influencers living in these, like, beautiful properties on these farms and all the stuff, and kind of got in my head a little bit. And when we went and looked at it, I all of a sudden it was like, but this house was our dream house. Like, this was the one that we used to walk by and be like, imagine we would live in that house. And we both sold our houses to be able to afford this house. We rented out the basement apartment. We did all of these things to be able to live here. And it's almost like the audacity to look at what we have and say it's not enough has taken a lot of reframing, a lot of refocus, while also seeing, I also want to learn how to prepare for my future. I also want to learn that I really love traveling with my kids and I know I can't work this much forever. So how do I plan ahead so that later in life I can still travel with them and we can still have those opportunities? How can I plan so that I don't have to work until I'm 99 years old? How can I, you know, have better conversations around money so that I'm being wise about the money that I do have, not so much looking at how can I keep up with the Joneses? And I think that that is a really fascinating part about that I've observed about women, especially, is that men will very proudly boast their successes. And women oftentimes hide it because they know that jealousy and comparison can cause rifts in women relationships, which is, I think, maybe a big determining factor as to why we don't open up in conversation about money, because it does feel like I don't want there to be a shift in this relationship because maybe I'm doing well, or I don't want to feel ashamed because I'm not doing well in this one part of my world, while men are out there like, here's where to invest in this, do this. Like, they're sharing trade secrets. And I feel like we're sitting here going, well, I don't want to talk because I'm afraid of being judged, or I'm afraid that people will see me differently, or that they'll hold it against me, or that I will become that I don't know where they're at. So what if it makes them feel bad? What if it makes me feel bad? It can be, we're very, I think, confused about how to approach a lot of these conversations and also lift each other up. I have said to my one friend is very open talking about finances. And I said to her, I'm so grateful for people like you, because if it weren't for people like you, I wouldn't have taken even the chances. If it wasn't for her, I wouldn't have quit my job that put me into having enough time to do social media full time. I wouldn't be where I am at now without her guidance of, you have to take this plunge and here's the different steps you can take to get there. It was a woman who led me through that conversation, especially in my own discomfort of, oh my gosh, change. That's really scary. And unguaranteed finances, that's even scarier. But I think we need to be better about approaching it. How have you, said that in your books, you're very honest about the snapshots of your money. How have you sort of approached that sharing without sort of introducing that comparison mind trap that so many women tend to put themselves in?
I mean, money is a mind fuck. Like, if you have money or if you don't.
Yeah, like, fair.
It just doesn't, like, then choose. It's more fun to have money. So it's gonna be a mind fuck either way. You know, and it's not gonna buy you things. You're right. Like, it will buy you a beautiful silk pillow, but it's not gonna buy you sleep. It will buy you a nice hotel, but it's not gonna buy you experience. Like, you have to work. You have to do the work around all of the mindset stuff and all of that. And so, like, the comparison, I don't know. I've done a ton of work. When I say work, I mean like mental health work around this stuff. And so, like, you know, I think that what I do is allow people to have these conversations that need somebody to go first. And so I think the ends justify the means there. If I can get a woman to pick up a money book who never imagined she picked up a money book, we all win. And we have to have these conversations in order to get ahead. It's like pricing the house without knowing the comp of the area, right? Like, we're trying to negotiate in a way that we don't understand, like, what we're dealing with. And dudes talk about it all the time. And it's not that they know more. They just talk about it more. It's like, you know, I could make millions of dollars in my portfolio and be like, oh yeah, like, I invest. And a guy, like, stayed at a Holiday Inn Express and, like, bought a cryptocurrency and is like, I'm amazing, right? It's just like the, talk about audacity. It's that confidence that I, you know, I hope we can collectively have as women. And the way to do that is to just start. Like, it's a lot, we have a long ways away, right? Like, we have a long road to get to close the wage gap, the wealth gap, the home ownership gap. You know, there's all the gaps are there. Like, we're doing better and we're actually making more money. But the thing that I'm concerned about right now is the investing gap. And so we're making more money, but that's all sitting in our checking accounts. And when I say our, I mean all women. Like, I have a girlfriend too that sold her company for hundreds of millions of dollars. She got a payout and it's sitting in her Bank of America checking account. And I'm like, girl, you just ran a ginormous company. Like, you have figured out harder things in life. Like, what is standing in your way? Like, let's just clear out all, like, this stuff, these, you know, things, that these sayings that you're telling yourself that you can't do, you're going to lose money. The same thing. You're saying it with, I don't know how much is in your bank account. You're more than welcome to say it or not. But, you know, she had millions of dollars in her bank account. And she said the exact same thing. She was like, what if I lose it? What is the least risky thing I can do? And so this is a whole other episode and we could do it. Or we could do like a quick cliff notes around investing. But like investing in my last book, I go through it, Miss Independent, from lowest risk to highest risk. And so when you have lower risk, you're going to also have lower reward. So that's the trade-off, right? So like if you start wanting to dabble or put your toe in the investing waters, you can look at, you know, CDs, money market accounts, money market funds, treasury, you know, different kinds of treasury bills or treasury notes or bonds, and then get into, you know, ETFs and mutual funds in the stock market. And, you know, the riskier you get, the more return you'll get. So in the stock market, historically, it's yielded about 7 to 10% over time. And the reason this is so important for us is because inflation is growing. In the last few years, it was wild. But historically, and I like to look at like big data sets over time to show us these trend lines, it's grown 3%. And so if we're not making 3% on our money, we're actually losing our purchasing power. And so that's a really, really important reason to invest. And you talked about, you know, being a credit card girly, and so am I, and I pay mine off. And there are a lot of really important protections that you get from using a credit card. If somebody steals, you know, your money, like you have all of those protections, you have the chargeback, I mean, you have the points, you have all of that, you build your credit versus being a debit devotee. And so when that interest on a credit card, if you're not paying it off in full, if it's around 20%, by the way, we all don't have the same interest rate, it's connected to our credit score. So I know we're also not sitting around talking about like, how much are you paying on your Amex or whatever? It's all connected. Like the higher credit score, it works like a seesaw. The higher the credit score is, the lower the interest rate is, because the higher your credit score is, it's going to show lenders, whether it's credit card companies or mortgage company or any sort of loan company, that you're a better borrower. So you're going to pay less in interest. But like, let's say it's 20%. So the way that that snowballs out of control, it's not a 20% simple interest. It's a compound interest, which like works on itself. And so that's why it gets insane if you don't pay it off. I mean, I experienced that. That same force can be used in your favor when you're investing, like that compound interest where your money is working for you. And we work so hard for our money. I think it's time it returned the favor. You know, they're just, it really, and this is my mission. This is the reason I get up in the morning. You know, you and I were both a little bit on the struggle bus this morning, but like, this is my why. I want to help women and to understand that it's not that complicated. It's not that hard. You have figured out harder things. Dude, getting out of a divorce situation at 30 with kids, like all of that is way harder than opening up a brokerage account. And we can do it together. Like I'll hold your hand, opening up whatever. They're all the same. E-Trade, Schwab, Fidelity, Vanguard, nobody's paying me to talk about them. They're all basically the same. You have a bank and you have a brokerage. So if you have a brokerage account, that's where you can go buy into the stock market. So somebody said like, oh, can I buy Apple stock at the Apple store? That's a very fair question. And that makes sense because we don't know. But you open up a brokerage account, and my suggestion, just like Warren Buffett, one of the greatest investors of our time, he put this in his own will for his wife to put 90% of their money into low-cost S&P 500 index funds and then 10% into government bonds. And so S&P 500 index funds is basically what you can do to track the market over time. And when I talked about like how the market grows, that's essentially a proxy for that. And so just going on, opening up a brokerage account, it looks really scary, but I promise the first time you do it, it's not. It's like the first time you did anything really hard. Mm-hmm. I don't know, changed an HDMI cord. Like,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. The first time I did it, I was like, which one is this? And now I'm like, okay. I'm a technician. It's just like anything that like seemed really complicated to start. Once you do it, you know, it's way less scary. It's way less intimidating.
I love that you talked about sort of the inflation piece too, and sort of like working ahead of it, because I remember when we sat down at one point with an investment broker and we were talking about different options for like saving for retirement. And so we were looking at different ways. And I remember, I don't even remember what the number is, but he pumped out this like big number of how much we would have if we retired at a certain age. And we were like, oh my God, high five. And he's like, yeah, but it's about value, about a third of that, like in now time. Like, and I was like, it was like, oh my gosh, money is like its value shifts so much over time. So what would maybe sound like it's going to be a lot will actually look very different in time. And so that was the first time I really thought about the fact that like we have to be sort of thinking about that for the future, even like the opportunity to retire. It's all just a lot to take in. But like you said, these tiny little bite-sized pieces, I'd love for you to sort of share as we come to a close, if we're sort of getting ready to step into some more financial literacy, what of your books would you say is the best one to sort of get going on and sort of pick up? Or maybe you can talk about all of them and the differences between them.
Thank you. Yeah. And when you were having that conversation about retirement, the thing that people forget too, if you have a 401k, is that you're going to pay taxes when you take that money out. So that's not the full amount that you get. And also that purchasing power is going to be less over time. But thank you for, you know, mentioning my books. The first one is Rich Bitch. It came out about 10 years ago. And it's a 12-step plan to getting our financial life together finally. And the second one is Boss Bitch, which is about getting your career together, whether you're an entrepreneur or an intrapreneur or a mompreneur or whatever preneur. We all go through different stages as women. And the third one is Becoming Superwoman, which is a 12-step plan from going from burnout to balance, which is what I experienced in my career. And then the last one is Miss Independent, which came out a couple of years ago. And that's the most advanced yet. It's a simple 12-step plan to start investing and grow your own wealth. And then I have another one coming out next year, The Money School, which is like a full dummies type, but cooler look at everything, you know, investing 101.
Awesome. And your podcast, quickly, Money Rehab. What can people expect when listening to the podcast?
It's a daily podcast.
Whoa, and so, good for you.
Yeah, girl. So it breaks down everything going on in the money world, but also tips and tricks for getting your financial life together. Again, Money Rehab, the idea that the only problem you can't fix, especially with money, is the one you don't admit you have. So we talk to people, like I advise them, like we work through problems together.
Yeah. You know, I got to say, somebody recently asked me like how I started to understand football. And I was like, I started listening to podcasts about football and I picked up what was going on and I started watching the game intentionally. And when you were saying about the podcast, and like, I was like, damn, it really is just right there. It's within our reach. It's accessible for everyone. Listening, learning, paying attention, even just with a curiosity mindset before we get into activating ourselves or maybe just planning for the future and wondering about, you know, different scenarios. I find that there's so many resources at our fingertips and it doesn't have to feel as intimidating. I mean, I spent so much of my life passively watching football and only in the last year have I understood it. And it felt like a math equation for the longest time. And now I'm like, I understand football. And watching the Super Bowl was exciting because I was like, I get it now. And it's because I've just spent a little bit more time, which has been no extra work on my part, just paying attention, taking notes, understand. Like once you learn it, it's there. And I feel, I don't know, just as we were talking, I was like, damn, like it really doesn't have to be this big, scary, intimidating thing. Maybe it's just as much as just, hey, I need to be willing to have the conversation. I need to be willing to listen. I need to be willing to learn and read and start absorbing that information so that I'm not just passively allowing money talks to happen around me, but I can actively participate in them and feel a little bit of semblance of that control and understanding and confidence with money, which I think is so what so many of us lack in and is often, I mean, realistically joked about. We joke about how bad we are with money. We joke about how we spend before we save. We joke about all of this. And I'm so much a part of that too. And I want to do better. Like I want to learn. I want to teach my kids. And I love what you're doing for women. I think it's super awesome. So tell everyone where they can find you and tune into your work everywhere.
Thank you. You can find me at Nicole Lappin, wherever podcasts or social media is served. And anytime you want me to come to dinner with your girlfriends and have this conversation.
Make us have a money chat. I love it. Oh my God.
Just infiltrate it.
I love that so much. Well, thank you so much for everything. And for everyone listening, if you sweated out this whole episode, proud of you. I know that's not always comfortable, but I think important. And we're all coming from so many different financial stand places. And so I think that it's kind of fun and cool that we have this opportunity to learn and invest in our futures, invest in ourselves, and maybe just not be so intimidated by all of it, especially as women. Maybe you're the one to lead the charge of conversations about money at the next girls' night. And I think that's super awesome. So Nicole, thanks so much for leading the charge with us today. And for everyone else, we'll see you next week.
Well, friends, thank you so much for tuning in and listening to today's episode. For more information on this episode, check out the show notes or find us on Instagram at The Papaya Podcast. And if you loved what you just listened to or know somebody who would, please share it. Simply screenshot today's episode in the podcast app and share it to your Instagram stories. And don't forget to tag us. Last but not least, if you'd like to lend your personal support to the podcast, take a moment and leave a review on iTunes. We would be oh so grateful. Tune in next week for a fresh new episode of The Papaya Podcast, and we'll see you then.